Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we talk with martial arts practitioners about their histories and the influence that their practice of martial arts has on their lives. You are listening to the free version of this podcast, which is abbreviated. Help support this program by considering to subscribe to us on Patreon, where you will get 4 full-length podcasts each month, 1 week before the YouTube release date. The cost is that of about 1 coffee shop coffee per month. Go to www.patreon.com/malmag to subscribe. That is www.patreon.com/malmag. If you would like to purchase single full-length episodes of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, visit our Gumroad page at malmag.gumroad.com, and that is malmag.gumroad.com. In this episode, I sit down with Ohio martial artist Lee Groh, who has an incredible background, including Okinawan karate from his time in the Marine Corps, to studying with the late Larry Hartzell, to studying currently with the great Dan Inosanto. Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Today, I've got an old friend of mine, and this guy, to say he's a gem is, I don't know, I think an understatement. This is an individual who not only is fun to train with, but this is a very fun person to talk to because he's got a very strong history training with some of the, probably, in my opinion, some of the best martial artists in the history, or at least in modern history of martial arts. And so we'll talk to him about it. And I think you're all going to enjoy this conversation as much as I do. Lee Groh, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Tim. Thank you for the introduction. I'm just old and I've been around a long time.
Well, you know, well,
you know what Joel tells me?
What's that?
Clark, he says, Lee, you're immortal.
Yeah. You know, there gets to be, it's an interesting thing for all of you who are not sort of involved in the in Inosanto circle. So Joel Clark is the guy who travels with Guru Dan to assist him at seminars and has been doing so for, I think, the better part of 30 years at this point. And I noticed when I got involved in that and started going to instructor functions that, Guru Dan likes to take an average age. And that average age has actually been going up over time.
It has.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, where we kind of see 30s maybe for a long time now, I believe the average age is something like 48 at the last camp. And that doesn't mean that most people there were 48. It just means that we have some young people, that we've got quite a few people that are over 50 still training and really showing, I mean, really good activity. Like, you know, it's pretty amazing to watch. And you're one of those guys that is just, you know, phenomenal, amazing, and inspiring to watch, to continue to train in. I actually can't even make a guess of your age, to be totally honest with you. And I forget when you say.
I'm 76 years old.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay.
76, yeah. I'm still doing it.
Yeah. And he's doing it well. I mean, that's the thing. You still teach and train, right?
I do. I still teach. I was teaching at a school here where I live for a while, and school shut down. And now I've connected with John and Sean Meyer down in Westchester, the south of here. Mm-hmm. And I go down there and teach down there sometimes now.
Wow.
And I still is attending instructor camp with Kerwin Asado. Right now, I'm pretty deep into exploring Yip Man Wing Chun.
Oh, my God.
Yes, to look at the roots of Jeet Kune Do. I have an instructor, Tony Massengill, down in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
I meet with him once a week online, and we train. And then I travel down there and train with him personally, usually for 2 days at a time, all day. So that's pretty much what I'm doing right now.
Wow, they're not letting the grass grow under your feet, that's for sure.
Well, I'm trying. Yeah.
You're, again, it seems like there's a lot of people I know from the Midwest that are trained. So this is another Midwestern Ohio martial artist. I actually had Michael Perez on here a couple of weeks ago, who you saw at camp. That was his first camp there, yeah. which was yeah. awesome. So I think what's, you know, a good place to start with you is your history. I mean, you've trained with a lot of people over the years. And what was really fun was kind of finding that you and I had an interesting intersection as far as arts we studied earlier. So Lee, how did you get started in the martial arts?
Well, I started when I was 16 years old, which was about 60 years ago now, here in Dayton, Ohio, just north of here. And I started with Matsuya Bashi Shorinryu Karate under some students of Shoshin Nagamine.
Mm-hmm.
And I trained there a number of years. Went in the Marine Corps back in 1966. Did some Shotokan early on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Vietnam, and I met a student of Azo Shimabuku when I was in Vietnam. And when we were able, we trained together in the evenings, you know, when the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong weren't messing with us. And I did that for most of the time I was there. So I did that for a time, and then came back to the States, and then went back to Okinawa, and I trained directly with Azo Shimabuku on Okinawa, and a first-generation student of his. And then I returned to Okinawa a few years later for another tour, and again trained with him extensively. So that was that's the beginnings of my martial arts, and then went on from there.
Wow. So Master Shimabuku, that's someone in my past, not directly, as I never had the opportunity to train with him directly. I was a young kid training in Shobayashi Shonryu in Moline, Illinois.
But okay.
My teachers had teacher's teacher, Warren, or Bugsy his nickname, Williams, was a Marine and trained with him in Okinawa. And then his student, Ulysses Owens, was my teacher. And UC also then went trained directly with Master Shimabuku, as did, I want to say, at least one or two of the black belts of our school. And we also hosted him, which reminds me, next time you come out, I'll pull that news article, that newspaper article about him being in Moline, for you to read. I have it. It's really good. So in the 80s, you know, we had him come to the school, and it was probably like 1984 or something like that. So yeah, he came here to the US and was at our school. So, you know, great deep respect from me for him. The kid that was my best friend that got me into that karate class also joined Marines, ended up in Okinawa and studied with Master Shimabuku. That was actually his purpose of even joining the Marines. He wanted to take the chance to hopefully get stationed in Okinawa and train with Master Shimabuku, and he was lucky enough to have that happen. So, you know, there's a lot of connection there. So that was always amazing to me. When you said that you had trained with him, I thought, oh, wow, there's a really, really nice connection.
I did. It was quite an experience training with him. And it was eye-opening, too. By that, I mean, my instructors early on in Ohio, when I was a teenager, it was hardcore back then.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even brutal. And very, very militaristic.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's what it was supposed to be like. You know, that I went to Okinawa and trained with Master Shimabuku, and it was nothing like that. Nobody beat on me. You know, and when I was a teenager, you weren't allowed to smile in class. You couldn't talk. And you were corrected harshly, and sometimes physically harshly.
Wow.
And he was nothing like that, you know. I'm thinking back, I can't recall him himself ever lining us up and drilling us. Mm-hmm. The senior black belts did that, but he did not. The senior black belts would start the class, and he would materialize there. We trained on a rooftop outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he would materialize in the dark, which was always kind of mysterious. We'd look up, there he'd be, you know. And it was individual. And what do you know? What's your level? Okay, you go over there. okay, you go over there. And then he would walk around and help us individually. And it was just so, you know, you learned a lot, and it was just so, so refreshing to have that experience with him.
Wow.
And it was, and then afterwards, it was a family atmosphere, you know, especially the senior people. We'd go down into his house, and he would feed us, his family would feed us, and we'd sit there with him, and it was just a great experience, all the way around. You know, he was like a father to me when I was there as a young Marine far from home. So unforgettable, really unforgettable experience.
Wow. That sounds so much like the experience that my friend Ted also said, the family atmosphere about it, being able to eat with the family and this sort of thing. Ted had reflected that at the time he was there, which would have been probably very late 1980s into the 1990s, that Master Shimabuku had two dojos. There was sort of a one near the Marine base or on the Marine base, and then there was one at his home, and there was sort of two distinct groups then. You, like, the bulk of people would train at the Marine one, and then there was like an invite group to the one at his house. Was it like that when you were there too?
No, it was not. There were two dojos there, yes, at that time, but there wasn't a dojo on the base. There was a dojo near the base where I was stationed, which was Ken Village. And then he had another dojo that one of his black belts taught at, which was north of that base, north there. There wasn't a base school. That happened later on, my understanding is. I trained with him the first time in 1969, and then again 1970, 71, and then the mid-1970s. So that was before that time. It's a little bit different. And the training was, we trained outside on a concrete rooftop in the dark. We had one little fluorescent light there. And then we had a little small dojo, very small dojo across the street that we'd have to run over to when it rained. so that was how we trained at that time. And it was a great experience. It really was.
Wow. So 69, I don't know if it's been a while since I've sort of read my notes and handouts from those days. I know I've got it available where I could go dig it up. It'd probably take me 30 minutes to get into that locker, foot locker, and get it. But that one of my favorite stories, martial arts stories just in general, is about Master Shimabuku and his training with Master Chibana. And I want to say that 69 sounds about when this story happened, may have been a little earlier, but you know, the infamous story about him going to Master Chibana to get his kata corrected, and he took his red belt off and wore a white belt during the correction.
Yes.
Is that a familiar story? Yeah.
I knew no. Yeah, that was before Master Chibana passed away. I think about 1968, 67. So it was before that. But yes, I'm familiar with that. Yes, I am.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite humility stories that I like to share to people when you want to kind of discuss humility of, like, you know, here's this guy that's earned the top rank of karate or even, you know, Japanese martial arts, your 10th degree or 10th dan. And in the face of his senior, out of respect, he put on the beginning rank to receive correction. I mean, that story just really resonates with me.
And yes, it does. And you know, carrying that forward to Goro Inosato, he sets the example in that regard also, because he does the same thing. He does the same thing. You know, he has the white, what he calls the white belt mentality or the beginner's mentality. And that's how you can really grow, you know, as you know. And, I try to emulate that. I think that's a very powerful lesson is, you know, you don't arrive. You always continue to to try to grow and to learn. Yeah. I think that's a good thing.
Exactly. What do you think set Master Shimabuku apart from a lot of people as a teacher?
As a teacher, I think that excess is openness. His openness. You could be a brand new student, and he would come over there and teach you. You know, make you feel welcome there. A lot of Oriental teachers don't do that, you know, as you know. They'll sit off to the side and they ignore the junior students and put themselves on a pedestal. And he never did that. He never did that. He was always open. He taught us good karate, strict good karate, but not in a harsh way, in a fatherly way. And always open, always open. And of course, we talked about the family atmosphere, you know, and in the beginners too, he'd bring them in, sit down, you know, and his family would eat with his family, and just that openness, that access to him. No big pretense, you know.
Wow. Very amazing. What was the training like as far as the, I mean, was it, he always kind of said, talked about kata a lot from what I.
Oh, yes.
So the training, did you spend a lot of time in kata or in technique or in the physical training or what was it mainly like with him?
It was a mix of everything you said there. However, he emphasized the kata. The karate was the kata. So we spent a lot of time training that. We did the physical training. He emphasized the makiwara, the punching board training. And we did some sparring too. And it was a little bit different from what you see today. We wore the protective gear and went, you know, made hard contact, you know. Kind of a kendo headgear and a padded chest vest, and we go after it. But kata was the emphasis of the training, and at that time it was for most of the Okinawan teachers. Kata was the karate, and everything else supplemented that. So in so a lot of kata practice.
All right. Did you get into, I'm starting to see a bit of a movement with some karate people today, which I think is, you know, amazing. And it was kind of one of those great mysteries to me as a guy studying that that particular art, Shobayashi Shoryu. There's a good handful of kata. I forget how many. There's like 20, right? Or 20?
You had 19 empty hand katas. Then you had two with the sai. And two with the staff, two with the bow. So you had 19 empty hand and four weapons katas. That's what he was teaching at that time.
Gotcha. Okay, I remember at the time that I moved away from my teacher, I had, not well, but I had all 19 empty hand and two bow forms. And I think I have my instructor videotaped doing a couple more, I think, maybe the sai form or something for me to kind of continue studying. But to kind of get back, so the great mystery to me was the application, what we call bunkai, right? The bunkai.
Well, yeah, but there's different level to application, Tim. A lot of people did not learn.
Yeah.
They don't understand. See, there is an application that is a basic application, bunkai, okay? Mm-hmm. Which really involves what most people learn and what most instructors teach now, which is block, kick, punch. Okay. Mm-hmm. But in a higher level, and that's kind of reserved for people who are with the teacher for a longer period of time. It's called Tichiki is one, which is involves nerve striking and so forth. And the blocks are eliminated. There are no blocks. Okay. Everything that appears to be a block is really a strike or a joint manipulation of some kind. So there are different levels to that bunkai. And a lot of times what you see is really not what you get. You know, you look like a middle block is not really a middle block. It can be a strike. It can be a joint lock of some kind. So there are different levels to that.
That starts sounding a little more like some other things that I do currently.
Let me tell you something, you know, I still do karate. To be honest, you do karate to some degree with one of Master Shimabuku's very senior people, a guy named Bill Hayes, out of Virginia. Yeah, incredible martial artist, really, really good. Yeah.
I've heard his name back when I was a kid training. So, yeah, though I've never met or talked to him and hope to get him on this program as well.
I can probably set that up for you.
I'd be love to.
Conversation for you. Been around martial art, like I said, about 60 years. He's one of the people that I hold in very high regard, as a person and as a martial artist. But I still train with him from time to time. I trained with him last spring and maybe training with him again this spring. He does an annual training thing. So he's very knowledgeable in that regard. He spent a lot of time at Master Shimabuku, so he's very knowledgeable about the higher levels of application of the movements of the katas. So it would be good for you to talk to him.
Yeah, for sure. Wow, that's great. So did you, after you you mainly trained with Master Shimabuku when you were in the service, or did you go back and train with him after you were out?
I did not. I moved on. You know, I went back to Okinawa a third time and was stationed on a different part of the island and trained with another sensei there, Master Siki Arakaki. And it was also a Shorinru, but it was called Matsumura Orthodox Shorinru. I trained with him for a year. Let me say something about the training. I say a year, but like on Okinawa at that time, that was every night. And you had 3 or 4 hours a night on the weekends. And not like what you see in the States today where you go maybe 2 or 3 times a week for an hour. You know? It wasn't like that at all, you know. So when you train for a year, you're getting several years at least in that year period of time. So, anyway, I got off track there.
And this concludes the abbreviated version of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Please click the like and subscribe buttons, as well as the notification bell. Also consider subscribing to the full-length podcast at www.patreon.com/malmag or purchasing individual full-length episodes at malmag.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Lee Groh. Coming up next week is another military veteran with an amazing background, John Doty. Check out the Malmag store at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and click on the store tab. There, you will find a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Kirby Kerbong, as well as Timmy B's and Dos Manos t-shirts. Many more products coming soon. Also click on our courses tab to purchase online courses, right now featuring a course in the Dos Manos stick of FMA. More courses to come. This show is produced by Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine. Visit us at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and enjoy the free version of our online magazine with articles, a recommended schools page, and a worldwide events calendar. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.